Sanballat and Tobiah. We can learn so much from those two guys. Because they're an enemy of somebody trying to do something, and because Paul is all about trying to change something in our lives, as well as learning the doctrinal aspect of it, I think this will be just as I said in the past, this is fantastic practical application for so many folks out there, and even us here, that are trying. And these are what we're up against. And I just, the last couple of days, I've just been thinking about these two guys, and I'm looking at the details again, and I'm seeing more than what we talked about in the past. So, Nehemiah, is where we are, Nehemiah chapter 1. I will do my best not to verse pick it, because it'll take us too long. And I'm hoping we won't get it all done. I don't want to get it all done tonight. I think we understand, if we remind ourselves a little bit, we understand a lot of what takes place at the beginning of Nehemiah's attempt of rebuilding his wall and strengthening his wall. But I think we probably kind of hurried through the end. And I noticed today, going over this a lot, yesterday and today, that towards the end of all this stuff, I see some things that are absolutely spectacular as far as, again, like I say, application for us. Because we will see, or we are seeing, or have seen, everything in this little series of these first six chapters of Nehemiah, we've seen these things come true over and over again. So, Nehemiah chapter 1, and we can learn from these two guys, just for those that have not heard it before. Nehemiah, God has him rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem, and they've been destroyed. And he gets upset. He sees the problem. And he gets permission to get the people excited and to rebuild the walls. And while he does that, two guys named Sanballat and Tobiah are not happy with it. And they do everything in their power to stop them from strengthening and rebuilding the wall. And we learn from those two guys, there's a process they go through as they try and try and try again to stop this process from taking place. We see that in our friends and our family and our neighbors and people in town, the government. We see these things all taking place. But like I said, there's some things at the end of this that I think you can even see for yourself if you want to read through it the rest of this week. It'll help us that if we try to do something different in our lives, it'll help us understand the attacks that we will come under. Okay? We will realize as we look at these things, I think we'll recognize more that people will consider us as their enemy, and they'll treat us like that. They'll treat us like Tobiah and Sanballat, who honestly thought it was wrong what they were doing, and so this is what they went about to do. And the other thing that concerns me now is I wonder if maybe possibly we don't act like Sanballat and Tobiah when somebody gets their life changed, or we try to do some things different, or somebody else tries to do something, and we see somebody else's friends or family or something. Is it possible for us to become like Sanballat and Tobiah? And that's probably the newest way to look at this thing. So keep this in mind. If I got a list of things here that if we were to try to claim these verses, we will be under the attack of Sanballat and Tobiah type people. For example, in Acts 19, it says, "So mightily grew the word of God and prevailed." If the Bible starts to prevail in your life, or you turn to your Bible more, and you start to respond to the rightly dividing, and you're starting to see some things that need to be changed in your life, or your family's life, or whatever, That'll kick in Sanballat and Tobiah. You want that Bible to prevail. If you don't want to just learn it, and you actually want it to, you know, run your life as such, that'll be a problem. Acts 26, where Paul talks about to open our eyes and to turn us from darkness to light and from the power of Satan unto God. If that's your desire, you will meet Sanballat and Tobiah. I promise that. If we see in Ephesians 3, whereby when ye read, ye may understand my knowledge in the mystery of Christ, if your desire as a Christian amongst other Christians, and your desire is to learn what Paul has to teach, because see, that's the mystery that Paul teaches and nobody else does. If you want to try to have that understanding If you want to understand his knowledge in the mystery of Christ, being Paul, you will meet Sanballat and Tobiah. If you try to instigate any of those prayers that we've talked about that Paul has preached in Ephesians and Philippians and Colossians, you'll meet Sanballat and Tobiah. That's just the way it's going to be. You can't try to be what Paul would have us to be without running into Sanballat and Tobiah. So we're going to go through these again. For example, in Philippians, being confident of this very thing, that he which hath begun a good work in you will perform until the day of Jesus Christ. If you allow him to work in you through the scriptures, you will run across Sanballat and Tobiah. So have no fellowship with unfruitful works of darkness. See, if you choose to stay away from some things now, and not to fellowship with unfruitful works of darkness, you'll meet Sanballat and Tobiah. Because there's going to be somebody in your family or neighbors or friends that are going to pull some of the things that Sanballat and Tobiah pull here. That's why this is so applicable. And in Ephesians again, it says, for the perfecting of the saints. God's going to try to finish a work in us. And we're going to run into Sanballat and Tobiah. Says here that they may recover themselves out of the snare of the devil. What if you choose to get out of the snare that you're in? You're going to run across Sanballat and Tobiah. You might as well be prepared for what's going to come. It'll help you look ahead. What's happening? It says again in Timothy, continue thou in the things which thou hast learned and hast been assured of, knowing of whom thou hast learned it. Well, we learned it from Paul. It's about the risen Christ. You'll run across Sanballat and Tobiah. But if you're going to try to teach and live and all that kind of stuff, the Great Commission as such, or the revelational teachings or whatever, Sanballat and Tobiah won't be bothered. They won't react the way they did in Nehemiah. Thessalonians, if any man obey not a word by this epistle, note that man have no company with him. If you make that kind of a choice towards somebody, you'll run across Sanballat and Tobiah. That we may be delivered from unreasonable and wicked men. If that's your desire, and you stay away from some people, maybe in a witness you have something, but as far as fellowshipping, or maybe it's just best to walk out of the room or stay away from the situation, you'll run across Sanballat and who? Tobiah. You just will. Night and day, praying exceedingly that we might see your face and might perfect that which is lacking in your faith. If you have a desire to have that which is lacking in your faith shown to you, either through preaching or through this Bible, through Paul, Sanballat and Tobiah is going to get into your life and try to do something to prevent that from happening. For they themselves show of us what manner of entering in we had unto you. If your life is going to start showing in its visualities that you're making some changes based on Paul's teachings, you're going to run across Sanballat and Tobiah. They're going to be there. Mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth. If you try to clean up your life, you're going to run across those two fellows. But now we also put up all these: anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth. That's at any time. You want to clean up your mouth, you're going to run across Sanballat and Tobiah. Lie not one to another. There's another one. And then put on the new man. If that's what your desire is, you're going to run across those guys. Those things that you have both learned and received and heard and seen in me, do. If you try to do those things that Paul has taught, you know, the manner of life, Sanballat and Tobiah are going to step up and try to keep you from doing that. Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before. If that's your desire, is to forget about what's happened in the past and move forward, I guarantee you Sanballat and the Tobiah are going to enter into the picture. I promise you. And this I pray, that your love may abound yet more and more in knowledge and in all judgment, that you may approve things that are excellent, that you may be sincere and without offense till the day of Christ. If you start making judgments on things and you say, you know, we're not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to do this anymore. We shouldn't go here. We don't need to watch that. We don't need to turn that on. Get off of that thing and let's have a couple minutes of time. Let's do something worthwhile with your time. Sanballat and Tobiah are going to show up. So if Sanballat and Tobiah are going to show up, we ought to be able to really learn from these two guys what your friends and family are going to do to you to keep you from trying to get what Paul's trying to get us to get. Did I say that right, LD? I think I said that right. Now, we know that they're going to look at us sometimes like we're the enemy. The prophet is not without honor, but in his own country and among his own kin and in his own house. So we know we're going to be looked upon as an enemy. So we're going to meet them as Sanballat and Tobiah. I will very gladly spend and be spent for you, though the more abundantly I love you, the less I be loved. So anybody you try to show some things to, they might just turn around and be sandballot to you or to buy them. And then here Paul says, am I therefore become your enemy because I tell you the truth? Is that, do we become Sanballat and Tobias to other people? Are we somebody else's enemy? So let's learn from these two guys, and let's learn from Nehemiah that this is what will happen. Remember all this? Remember we talked about this a couple of times? I think this is my third sermon on these two guys. I don't repeat sermons, but I sure do repeat subjects and things. These guys are marvelous. We can still learn from them. Look at chapter 1. Now, we're not going to read through it verse at a time. Close, but not quite. I would encourage you to go home and just read through at least the first six chapters of Nehemiah, because after that, the wall was built, and you got a whole bunch of other things they do. But this is just to refortify, to get back up to strength, and to protect themselves from the enemy as such. In verse 3, Nehemiah is the man here. He's the one that we're talking about here. He was asking about what happened in Jerusalem. What's the status here? And it says in verse 3, and they said unto me, the remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. So Nehemiah finds out this place is a disaster. Now, we know here today that godliness is a disaster. And I think we should possibly think about using the word godliness instead of the word Christianity. Because really, godliness is true Christianity. The belief of God, etc., what it talks about in that verse. So we know that that's a mess. There's ungodliness everywhere. There's false religions and cults and everything all over the place. We're aware of the status of the local church. The deceptions and the changes that are going on within the churches. We're aware of the hatred and the disbelief of a universal church, the concept of the body of Christ. We're aware of what's happened to preaching. Preaching is either hellfire and brimstone, of God going to snuff you out if you don't give and don't do this and don't do that, don't bring people to church and stuff like that. Or it's just wishy-washy, nice 15-minute sermons with the fact that when you got about a 45-minute music program. So we know that preaching has changed. We know that teaching is not teaching what they should be teaching. If they're teaching anything, they're not teaching Paul's teachings. A lot of teachings in that verse, but that's in that word. We know that what people are being taught are profane and vain babbling. So it's a mess. It's a mess. We know what's going on with Christians. We tend to see more and more as we get into these things that Christians probably really aren't Christians. They can be deceived. They can have another Jesus. So we're concerned about that. We know that there's hundreds of Bibles out there that say things all differently. And they can't be the sword of the Spirit. They can't be that sharper than a two-edged sword. They can't be that. Something's very dangerous with those things. We know where those modern Bibles are taking people. They're setting them up for taking the mark. Right? I mean, Ephesians 1:13, one of our favorite verses, changes and it matches what it says to take in the beast in Revelation. It actually tells Christians to take the mark already. So we know where these Bibles are headed. These Bibles are setting up an antichrist and a worldwide religion. Children and grandchildren, we're concerned about our kids and our kids' kids. We see out there that they're going into this modern Christianity just all over the place. The country is a disaster. Freedoms are being taken away. The economy, what economy? We know that there's a huge travel down the highway to globalism. We know that. It isn't something we're talking about anymore. It's happening. Again, it made the major news that Kissinger says that Obama is ripe for starting a global new world order. I mean, that was the headlines. Kissinger is one of the big guys. So you know that it's getting closer. So we know that truth is just not there anymore. And we know that things are a mess. Things are a mess. Look at our own personal lives. How are we doing? Not somebody else, but how are you doing? Do you have that joy? Do you have that peace in spite of whatever's going on? Where do we need to build a wall? Where do we need to build up the strength? So when Nehemiah heard that it was a disaster, which we are now aware of, that today is a disaster, what was his response? His response was in verse 4. And it came to pass, when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept, and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. Now we know that this is an Old Testament story, so we know that there is a fear of God, and the prayer and fasting and the righteousness they had to do, and all these things had to take place. But knowing what we know about Paul, I'll show you how we can still see this is still very, very properly applicable for us, not to us, but for us. Look at verse 5. So what does he do? He prays. He goes to God. What do we do when we realize what's going on? We go to God. How do we go to God? We can pray. Of course we can pray. But how do we hear from God? We have a Bible. So when we see that Nehemiah goes to God, let's put in our little mind, we go to God by going to this Bible. If we want to do any building or strengthening. Okay, verse 5. And said, I beseech thee, O Lord, God of heaven, the great and terrible God that keepeth covenant and mercy for them that love him and observe his commandments. Let thine ear now be attentive and thine eyes open, that thou mayest hear the prayer of thy servant, which I pray before thee now, day and night. That rings Paul there a little bit. But anyway, for the children of Israel, thy servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against thee, both I and my father's house have sinned. And it goes on, and he just talks about, he's praying for these people. And that's what they had to do in those days. And we still pray for each other. But he went to God for this thing. Now look at chapter 2. Chapter 2, verse 1, we see in verse 1 that Nehemiah actually had a good testimony with the king. He says, and it came to pass in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king, that wine was before him, and I took up the wine and gave it unto the king. Now I had not been before time sad in his presence. But now he is. But see, up until this point, he hasn't been sad. And he says here, wherefore the king said unto me, why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. Then I was very sore afraid, and said unto the king, let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad? When the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire. So, I like verse 4, then the king said unto me, for what dost thou make request? So I prayed to the God of heaven. We always say this is the quickest prayer in the Bible, because he answers right away. But he prays in the process here in the middle. And I said unto the king, if it please the king, if my servant have found favor in thy sight, thou wouldst send me into Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchre, so I may build it. So his testimony is good enough, and the king lets him go. And that's verses 5 to 8. And he lets him go. And that's fine. So look at verse 10. So Nehemiah is going to go, and he's going to check this place out. But look what happens in verse 10. Here they come. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, heard of it, heard of what? They're going to go and fix this place up. It grieved them exceedingly that there was come a man to seek the welfare of the children of Israel. They were grieved. Somebody is going to try to fix something. There's our first lesson. There's the first thing we can learn from somebody in your circle, in your life, in your family, in your friends, in your workplace, even in your church family, that you want to change something. And there will be somebody somewhere who will respond that will be exceedingly grieved. Just mark that. Look at verse 12. Now from this point on here, 12 to 16, Nehemiah goes and he checks the place out and he sees what's going on. And he's got his ways of doing, and you can read about that. Neither was any beast upon me, and he went quietly at night, and there's some things in there, but we get to verse 17. He's looked at the situation. See, we've looked at the situation. We know what's going on today very much more than we did in the past. And we have more to learn, I'm afraid. We're going to learn some more about what's going on. But we surveyed the situation. Then he says, then said I unto them in verse 17, ye see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come and let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach. Then I told them of the hand of my God, which is good upon me, as also the king's words that he had spoken unto me. And they said, let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for this good work. Okay, so Nehemiah goes to these people, and these people realize this is what God would have. When people see us or see you or see somebody try to make a change, They need to see that this is from God. Now, Tobias and Sandow don't see that it's from God until it's over. I'll give you a heads up on the conclusion. They finally realize that it was of God. But at this point, they do. So Nehemiah talks to some other people. And he gets these people to realize, you know what, this place is a mess. It's been destroyed. It's a reproach. It's a terrible testimony to God. And there are people there that see that, and they believe that this is what God would have, and they get involved. Now, they don't know what they're getting involved in, but they get involved. And we're the same thing. We see from one Bible what Paul, the risen Christ, says, that this is the situation. This is the deception that's going on. Here's the stuff about the Bibles. Here's the stuff that people aren't being taught about the law. Here's the stuff that I can show you that'll help you along as serving the risen and the living God. And those are the things that we learn from Paul. So we know that we're hearing from God. Because we believe this is the Word of God. This is the Bible. These are the words of God. So we stay together on this thing, knowing that, okay. In fact, wasn't it a bunch of years ago? I think the question was, do we want to learn what Paul has to say? I think that's how I put that thing. And we all said yes, and one of those kind of things. And we did. I mean, it was almost like to that Sunday. We started seeing preaching and this and that and whatever, and we got in on it together. But see, in the meantime, we've had people grieved because of what we've gotten into. I've had friends that are now former friends because they were grieved that I would step away from this one man. I noticed now on the Facebook they got a club for this guy, of all the people that love him, and they worship him in this thing, and it's just, boy, I'll tell you, that's going to be an exposing thing, that thing, but that's why they're still doing this stuff. But see, we stepped away. That grieved some people. We got into rightly dividing. That grieved some people. Then we got into Paul. That grieved some people. How could he do that? Oh, I can't believe you would do that. Who taught you that? Are you a hyper? Then they just get exceedingly grieved, just like Tobias and Sanballat. So he gets these people, and what they do in verse 18 is they strengthen their hands for this good work. Now, I'm going to try my hardest to give you quizzes and things like this, because, see, I don't mean this critical or anything. We know what we believe. We've heard the verses, we've heard the preaching, you've read what you've read, and you've kind of nailed down a lot of your beliefs now and your doctrinal things. But when it comes time to find it, we can't. And I'm afraid that what we've done is we've learned what we've learned, but we don't know why. And we can't show somebody why. So that's why we're going to do what we're going to do here. And I hope that will help us strengthen our hands, just like it said here with Nehemiah and his people. So they strengthened their hands for this good work. However, look at verse 19. Here we go again. Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, and Geshem the Arabian. So see, now these two guys heard what they heard what Nehemiah was going to try to do, and back in verse 10, it was Sanballat and Tobiah. Now in verse 19, we got Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem. So these two guys have already taken what they've seen that Nehemiah is going to do, and they've already went and told somebody else. Now they got a third person already ready to go back and help these guys fight against Nehemiah. So that tells me that these folks will talk to other people about it. And he says here, and Geshem the Arabian heard it, they laughed us to scorn and despised us and said, what is this thing that ye do? Would ye rebel against the king? So here's the first thing they're going to challenge. First, they laughed him to scorn. Oh, I can't believe you're going to try that. You're doing whatever. Blah, 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 blah. Then they despise them. But then I like that the third, will you rebel against the king? You mean you're going against what's right? You mean you're going against what Dr. Ruckman teaches? You mean you're going against what your previous pastor taught? You mean you're going against what even you taught 7 years ago, 10 years ago? Are you going against the government? Are you going against the town? Are you going against your employer? I mean, all the things. So the first thing they do is they respond by getting somebody else involved, laughing them to scorn. They despise them and accuse them of going against what is right. We've heard that happen before. Now, you know that, don't you? You can already think of some specific examples where you were laughed to scorn. Or maybe we don't do some things because we're afraid we're going to be laughed to scorn. Maybe we don't want to step up to all these different things that Paul has taught us because we don't want to be despised. And maybe they've got us thinking that what we're doing is still not right. Well, we have a Bible. Let's check it out. Let's find it out. That's the first response there, other than their grief. Okay, look at verse 20. Here's what Nehemiah said in response to that, or did. Verse 20, chapter 2. Then answered I them, and said unto them, the God of heaven, he will prosper us. Therefore we, his servants, will arise and build. But ye have no portion, nor right, nor memorial in Jerusalem. Okay, what do we see there? Nehemiah responded with faith and trust that what he's going to try to do is the right thing to do. Make sense? But this thing where it says, but ye have no portion, nor right, nor memorial in Jerusalem, you know what he says in American English there? Hey, this is none of your business. This is my life. This is what we're doing at the church. If you don't like it, whatever. This is what my family, this is where we're at. Listen, you've got nothing to do with this. It's none of your business. Just relax. Hey, I'm not here to fight you. This is what I'm going to do. And he says, ye have no portion, nor right, nor memorial in Jerusalem. This, we're going to fix this wall. We're going to fix this town. And this is not your problem. That's a good response. You would think that would have solved it, right? We go to chapter 3. They talk about the gates. We won't get into that. Let's go to chapter 4. Verse 1. But it came to pass that when Sanballat heard, now there it is again, say he heard that we builded the wall, he was wroth. That's very unhappy. Foaming at the mouth almost type of stuff, I would think. And took great indignation and mocked the Jews. And he spake before his brethren and the army of Samaria and said, What do these feeble Jews? Will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of the rubbish which are burned? Now Tobiah the Ammonite was by him, and he said, even that which they build, if a fox go up, he shall even break down their stone wall. So what do we have here? We have somebody telling you that they can't imagine you're going to pull this thing off. They have extreme doubt in what you're trying to do. You guys are going to rebuild this wall? Psh, right. You're nothing but a bunch of feeble Jews. You can't do that. And he says, will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day? Will they revive stones out of the burned rubbish? Can a fox just knock that thing over? He doubted how strong they were. He doubted how serious they were. And he doubted that they had what it take. They had what it would take to do what they said. He doubted they were capable, and he doubted of their ability. That's how he mocked them. Okay, so you want to try to do something, and the church is going to do something or whatever. And you got these people, they're gonna look at you and go, oh, come on, you gotta be kidding me. You're too busy with work, you're too busy doing this, you got so many problems, and you've kind of wishy-washy, you've always made things in your life, and you've always failed on them, so who do you think you are? You're not strong enough, you're not even serious, it might be good for a couple of days or whatever. I don't think you've even got what it takes. Let's watch them. They're gonna fall apart. I know they are. And if some little bitty trial comes into their life, like a little fox there, little trial comes into their life, they're going to crumble. They're going to crumble. Or look at yourself. You want to make some changes. You want to do what Paul's trying to teach us, the risen Christ is trying to teach us. And are you strong enough? Are you serious? Do you really think you have what it takes? Are you capable of making this kind of a change? Are you capable of stopping this? Do you have the ability? I mean, do you really want to? Because that's what you're going to be challenged with. Nehemiah's response, verse 4, chapter 4, verse 4. Hear, O our God, for we are despised, and turn their reproach upon their own head, and give them for a prey in the land of captivity. Now there's a prayer. And cover not their iniquity. And let not their sin be blotted out from before thee, for they have provoked thee to anger before the builders. Now, Nehemiah, this was Old Testament time, so in Nehemiah's time, he says, Lord, take care of these people because really, they're not mocking me. They think their doubt is in me, but what it is they don't think that God is real. They don't expect God to do this, and so they're actually mocking God. And Nehemiah says, Lord, can you just snuff them out? Show them that they're wrong, kind of a thing. And we know how Paul deals with it. We know how the risen Christ deals with that today. The long suffering and the patience and the mercy of God is going to help him learn. Help him learn. Help him learn these things and that type of thing. But Paul does say, eventually turn away from these people. So there does come a time. In fact, it's in Romans, I think it is, where Paul even says that man will receive according to his deeds. So these guys will be given what they've done. The same thing today. But still, I want to just mention the fact that Nehemiah says, listen, they're really mocking you, God. And if you are serious and you are capable, because you're alive, you're capable, you've got the word of God for your strength, et cetera, et cetera, you could make the changes. You could make some changes in your life, but it won't be easy. If anybody mocks you, it's because they're really mocking God. Because you are without a doubt have the word of God, the living God. You could do it. And if they say you can't, then they're really putting the screws down on God. Because God's going to be the one that does it. So there's that lesson to learn from that. Now let's look at verse 6. So, built we the wall. And all the wall was joined together unto the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. That's good. They had a mind to work. They were going to get the job done. How serious, again, back to those questions, these people must have been not feeble. They were serious. Because it said they had a mind to work. It's going to take challenge. It's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take some heartache. It's going to hurt. It's going to bother your flesh. You're going to have the mocking. You're going to have the anger. You're going to have the wrath. You're going to have the despising, the doubt thrown at you. There we go. What is that? Thrown at you. And it's going to be tough. But you got to have a mind to work. But look what happens in verse 7. Here we go. But it came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up, and that the breaches began to be stopped, then they were very wroth, and conspired all of them together to come and to fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. So what do we see here? I bet you already know what we see here from the past, but first of all, we see here that they're getting the job done. The walls were made up, the breaches were being stopped, and yet Sanballat and Tobiah got the Arabians involved. That's from Grecia. Got the Ammonites involved, that's from Tobiah. And the Ashdodites. So all of a sudden, these guys went out there and they've added to their troops. Now how many people do you have against you? And it says they were wroth. It says they conspired to fight against them. That means they get together some other time and they talk about you, and they talk about us, and they talk about what we've done here. They talk about what you're trying to do. And they try to find a way to stop what's taking place. Because it says at the end of that verse, and to hinder it. Can you imagine some of your friends or whatever getting together to talk about you? You tried to make some changes in your home or in your church or in your personal private life, and somebody actually sits down together and they try to figure out a way to stop you from doing what you're trying to do? Well, there's our example. And they're going to get more people involved. Look at verse 9, Nehemiah's response. Nevertheless, we made our prayer unto God. We got into our Bible. That's what we do today. We make our prayer unto God as well. And set a watch against them day and night. It says, because of them. So they stayed close to God, prayer and reading, as we would do today. And they set a watch. And they did not stop day and night. There's no time to back off. I flip a switch and you're not watching anymore. Hit a remote. You're not watching anymore. Some places we go, if you watch, you can't go there. That kind of a thing. Verse 10. And Judah said, The strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish, so that we are not able to build the wall. So here we have not any trouble from the outside, but from within. This is not Sanballat and Tobiah. This is from within. There's things going on that are just rubbish, just junk. Oh, just waste of time. Distractions. They get you down. Well, one of my biggest fears about the Facebook thing for people and kids, because I had one of the families out there, the dad said, you're not doing Facebook to the kids because the kids at school are trying to get them onto this Facebook thing. And he said, no, you're not. Well, we already got a problem because every kid in the world on Facebook and their kids aren't going to be on it. So now we've got an issue between mom and dad, you know, and why don't you let us do that? They don't do that yet, because someday that's coming. And then these kids, which I know have been pretty much kept away from a lot of the junk of the world at this point, they're going to be thrown right in there. The advertisements are wrong. The pictures are wrong. The things that the kids are doing is going to drag them down with their music and their pictures. They're putting videos on there. And those kids are going to get bit by that thing. That's rubbish. It really is. How serious are you? I'm really serious. Let's get rid of that rubbish. How strong? I'm strong. Do you realize that that's dragging you down? Because your kids, or you may even want to start looking like that or acting like that or doing some of the things they do, and you can't do those things. You don't live there. And as a result, you're longing for something that will never happen. And so you're depressed, you're unhappy because I can't do that. Or there's so many ways you can go with this stuff. The rubbish in our lives is keeping us from able to do the job. Well, don't be surprised Sanballat doesn't stay away very long, though, because now if they're weakened, Sanballat comes along. Look at verse 11. And our adversary said, they shall not know, neither see, till we come in the midst among them and slay them and cause the work to cease. So we're doing this conspiracy thing. And now they realize that they're getting weak because of the rubbish that's in their lives. Let's just slip in there with them, and we can knock the rug out from underneath them. When the time comes, we can kill them. We can stop this thing from happening. They shall not know, neither see, till we come in the midst. It'd be too late. They're in the midst. They're there. Now it's too late. Let those kids on that Facebook thing, or sports is something I'm going to be talking about here fairly soon, let them get involved in some of these things that we know is going to hurt them. You'll never get them out. How long do we keep them out? As long as possible. You know you can't keep them out forever, but let's not bring them in when they're so destructible or whatever. And their job is they want to slay them. They want to stop the work that's taking place. Let's say somebody out there finally decides, to homeschool. And we know that there's a lot of dangers in the homeschool movement, but hey, it's still an opportunity to teach your family within the home. Boy, what a marvelous decision that'll make. Boy, you want to start homeschooling? You will meet who? Sanballat and Tobiah in minutes. As soon as you make a phone call, hey, we're going to stay home this year. What? And you better. Hello, is this Superintendent Sanballat? I like to take my kids out, and there they go. And they will be under this attack. This is fantastic for those folks that make that kind of a decision. Verse 12. And it came to pass that when the Jews which dwelt by them came, they said unto us 10 times, from all places whence ye shall return unto us, they will be upon you. Boy, 10 times will wear you down, won't it? So they come in the midst of them. They've got this rubbish they're trying to get rid of. And these folks kind of, in their midst, and they kind of mess with them a little, kind of part of the gang. And they just kind of keep whittling you down. They say little things that'll, I don't know why I do, And 10, that was 4 times is all. 5, You know, then that's, well, glad the Vita's not working. That's right. I can relax tonight on that one. How many times is it going to take to wear us down? To quit trying to do what we're trying to do. And a lot of the changes, we don't even know what's happening. You know, the old frog in the boiling water thing, or toad, or whatever it is. Doesn't know until it's too late kind of a thing. Well, of course, Nehemiah has a response to this. They want to get in there, part of the crowd. Nehemiah says in chapter 4, verse 13, I'll help me get all done, that'd be good. Therefore said I, in the lower places behind the wall, And on the higher places, I even set the people after their families with their swords, their spears, and their bows. It's interesting. Nehemiah gets in the lower places. I suppose that's where the leader guy's right there, ready to anything comes around. Poof, he takes care of them, keeps them away, and puts the families up there where they're doing the work. And in the meantime, it says here, as we read here, not only are they working with one hand, they got the 357 in the other. I mean, they're just ready to fight. They're ready to fight as they do the work. You know, suppose that's going on today over there. I mean, they're doing what they're doing with the Palestinians, and Israel's doing what they're doing, but they're still working too. They got to keep this country. That's just what they do. Verse 14. And I looked and rose up and said unto the nobles and to the rulers and to the rest of the people, be not ye afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your houses. So then we go on, and you can read 14 to 23, and you see in verse 17 where they had the weapon in one hand and their work in the other hand, and down in verse 17 and verse 23, they're never caught off guard. Now, this sermon that I'm working on, that's going to be so hard to teach, is really because the strong man has been taken out of our home in the last bunch of years. So that's the issue. If I can get that across, so I can show you what the devil's been doing over all these years, I think you'll recognize what I'm trying to say. So the challenge here is to get us to be willing to fight what we need to fight for. And I know this is a marvelous story as Nehemiah and Sanballat and Tobiah, but how does that fit to us today? Well, let's remember the things that Paul has taught us. Let's remember the subtle things. Let's remember the things that we're not supposed to see and do. And where's the grace and mercy, and where's the changing of the voice? Where's the reproof and the rebuke when the time comes? Where's our stepping away from those we need to step away with when it's the right time to do so? That kind of a thing. And we need to be prepared. We need to be willing to fight. And it says, and fight for your brethren, your church, your brethren. Fight for your sons and your daughters. Why would you put your daughter into this situation? Well, we don't know. We didn't know that. Okay, well, now we know that. Well, we're going to learn that here pretty soon. And men, fight for your daughter. Fight for your sons. Fight for your wives. And for your houses, and as he says there. And they do it with a weapon in one hand and a hammer in the other. What's our weapon today? The Bible. That's our weapon. We keep that thing. Never get caught off guard to that thing. Okay, look at chapter 5. We'll get it done tonight. Chapter 5, verse 1. And there was a great cry of the people and of their wives against their brethren, the Jews. Now, first glance of this thing says, oh, here we go. The ladies are complaining. And that isn't what the case is. They are complaining. But they had a legitimate complaint. We, our sons and our daughters, are many. Therefore, we take up corn for them, that we may eat and live. Some also there were that said, we have mortgaged our lands, vineyards, and houses, that we might buy corn because of the dearth. There were also that said, we have borrowed money for the king's tribute, and that upon our lands and vineyards. Yet now our flesh is as the flesh of our brethren, our children as their children. And lo, we bring into bondage our sons and our daughters to be servants. And some of our daughters are brought into bondage already, neither is it in our power to redeem them, for other men have our lands and vineyards. We are in such a mess that our daughters and our wives have to go to work. They have to do these things. That's what they're saying. Now, that's a marvelous verse right there, verse 5, because it talks about our sons and daughters are bondage and servants now. And he says it again, some of our daughters are brought into bondage already. And they say they can't do anything about it. Well, Nehemiah's response in verse 6, I was very angry when I heard their cry in these words. Was he mad at the ladies? No, he was mad at the leaders. And I rebuked the nobles and the rulers and said unto them, ye exact usury, every one of his brother, and I set a great assembly against them. And I said unto them, we after our ability have redeemed our brethren, the Jews, which were sold unto the heathen. And will ye even sell your brethren, or shall they be sold unto us? Then held their peace. Then held they their peace and found nothing to answer. And it goes on here, these leaders who are putting everybody in such dire straits with taxes and demands and prices and the whole spiel that we can picture today. Nehemiah's response was, he went after those people and said, listen, you stop that. And it says there they had no answer. They held their peace. They had no answer. Look at verse 9. Also I said, it is not good that ye do. Ought ye not walk in the fear of our God because of the reproach of the heathen, our enemies? I mean, all you're doing is you're weakening our own people, and the enemy's going to step in there because you're just doing what you're trying to do. This has got so much America application here. I mean, Obama could look at this thing. We know he won't be. He could look at this thing and he said, listen, I'm going to deal with this thing the way that it was done in the Bible. Well, wouldn't that just score points with the media that's out there? But he could do it. He could follow Nehemiah and Jeremiah. Boy, it's not going to happen, so just relax, okay? But it's there. Look at verse 12. This is what they said, okay. They said, we will restore them, and will require nothing of them. So will we do as thou sayest. Then I called the priests and took an oath of them that they should do according to this promise. Also I shook my lap and said, so God shake out every man from his house and from his labor that performeth not this promise, even thus be he shaken out and emptied. And all the congregation said, amen, and praised the Lord. And the people did according to this promise. So Nehemiah fixed it by going to the people who were causing all this grief. I suppose if a person wanted to, depending on where their thinking is coming from, they could throw that verse right here on us right here. You're under this intense bondage. You can't do this and you can't do that. We don't say that. But the Bible is very clear about things. And yet Paul also puts no pressure behind it, no have to type of thing. All things are lawful. You know, dress what you want, eat what you want, go where you want, wherever you talk about what you want, pay. But if it's not expedient, if it's going to cause somebody to stumble, if you're doing it because you can't stop yourself from doing it, then you don't do it. And it's wrong. So that's how the risen Christ is taking care of this stuff. Same thing right here. They stopped doing it, though. And they could get back to their job. Look at verse 14. Moreover, from the time that I was appointed to be their governor in the land of Judah, from the 20th year, even into the 32nd year of Artaxerxes the king, that is 12 years, I and my brethren have not eaten the bread of the governor. But the former governors that had been before me were chargeable unto the people, and had taken of them bread and wine besides 40 shekels of silver, yea, even their servants bear rule over the people, but so did not I because of the fear of God. Nehemiah was not bought by anybody. This was not a government project, and he wasn't taking the money to have it done. He was able to do right and not worry about the money issue. He says, yea, also I continued in the work of this wall, neither bought we any land, and all my servants were gathered thither into the work. Moreover, there were at my table 150 of the Jews and rulers, besides those that came unto us from among the heathen that are about us. Now that which was prepared for me daily was one ox and six choice sheep. That's still a pretty good meal. And also fowls were prepared for me, and once in 10 days store of all sorts of wine. And yet for all this required not I the bread of the governor. So the people took care of him. He was cared for, but it wasn't an issue that would cause this whole thing. So listen, folks, I'll go through this. You need to go through this. And the people say, we'll go through this because you're going through this. And I'll just, for one example, I've probably told this many, many times. The day that we were cutting salary a number of years ago, and the pastor cut half in salary, and the pastor drove up a new 280Z or something, I'll tell you, that really does a lot of sap your energy. And Nehemiah didn't do that. He did not show up in a 280, whatever that kind of car was. That's just what happens today. You got these pastors saying everybody's got to give and sacrifice, and look at what they've got. Look at how they're living. Look at the cars they pull in, kind of a thing, or just whatever. Now, it's not an issue, but Nehemiah brings it up. I thought that was pretty good. Chapter 6, here we go. Chapter 6. Almost done. The wall is almost done now. Word gets out to the enemy. Look at verse 1. Now it came to pass when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem the Arabian and the rest of our enemies, there's the whole group there, heard that I had builded the wall, and that there was no breach left therein, though at that time I had not set up the doors upon the gates, not quite done yet, that Sanballat and Geshem sent unto me, saying, come, let us meet together in some of the villages in the plain of Ono. I like that. Just, oh no, let's go meet there. Oh no, we're not going there. But they thought to do me mischief. This is fantastic application right here. When people find out that you are serious, and you did have the strength, or the church were still here, the pastor still here, your family still together, you've grown, you've changed, you've made some changes in your life, and they've been fighting through all this, through this whole thing, then they're going to say, hey, you know, you guys are doing all right. Let's get together. But they thought to do me mischief. They were trying to continue that compromise, and all they wanted to do was still take Nehemiah down. Look at verse 3. And I sent messengers unto them. Now he wouldn't even do it himself, because that's what they wanted him to do. Telephone, email, I mean, whatever. Saying, I'm doing a great work, so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease whilst I leave it and come down to you? I got my life. I'm working on it. I'm getting there. My changes in my life. The church is still here. We've got direction. We've got we're able to pay for some things. We're still here. And if you want to come, we're here. But we're not going to go meet you halfway. Not going to do it. If I could get on some of these things and talk to these people and go back to the Ruckman side, go back to the Gibbs side, go back to the Great Commission side for a while, maybe I could show them a few things. No, that's not going to happen. I tried it. It doesn't work. They want to be friendly with you because they want to take you away from what they think you're doing. And, you know, whatever. Yet they sent unto me four times after this sort. I answered them the same answer. Well, I'm busy. I've got a life to do. I'm doing the best I can. I don't need to meet with you because you are trying to destroy me. We'll be glad to talk to anybody in the past years of this church, but listen, you're coming here on our terms. I'm not trying to be a stuck in the mud about it, but this is the way we are. We're busy. I backed off on a tremendous amount of emails and lists and stuff because all they wanted to do was either take me down or just argue. Nobody was willing to look at what was being said. They won't look at what, you know that. You show them the verses, they're not going to, you know. If anybody were to invite you over that you fought and fought and fought over, come on over, you look like you're doing really well, and you know what's going on. But again, remember, Paul talked about that sort of a thing. And then in verse 5, it gets tougher though. In verse 5, chapter 6, verse 5, Then sent Sanballat his servant unto me in like manner the fifth time. Now he's got a letter. Those famous letters. Wherein was written, it is reported among the heathen, and Geshmu said that, saith it, that this is one of those things, do you know that everybody's saying da 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 da? You know, who's everybody? Well, you know, Frank and Jimmy over here. That's everybody in town, right, that's for sure. And Geshmu saith it, that thou and the Jew, I wonder who Geshmu is. It is reported among the heathen, and Geshmu saith it, that thou and the Jews think to rebel, for which cause thou buildest the wall, that thou mayest be their king, according to these words. Nehemiah, you're just doing this because of the money. I've heard that. You're doing this because you like the power. You're doing this because you want to lord your faith over these people. You're doing this because you want to be the king. For which cause thou buildest the wall, that thou mayest be their king, according to these words. And thou hast appointed prophets to preach of thee, you know, preach about Nehemiah, how great he was, at Jerusalem, saying, there is a king in Judah, and now it shall be reported to the king according to these words. Boy, I tell you, Nehemiah, come now, therefore, let us take counsel together. We better talk about this. Everybody in town says that you're trying to do this for this reason. Now we got accusational letters. Nehemiah's response in verse 8, "Then I sent unto him, saying, there are no..." Sent unto him, he didn't go there. He sent unto him, saying, "There are no such things done as thou sayest, but thou feignest them out of thine own heart." He said, "That's not true. You're just making this stuff up." "Then I sent unto him, saying, there are no such things done as thou sayest." Oh, sorry. Verse 9, "For they all made us afraid, saying, their hands shall be weakened from the work, that it be not done. Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands." So while this was taking place, it was weakening the people. He denied it. Didn't spend a long time denying it. No point. And he prayed and he said, we're trying to do what we're trying to do here. Look at verse 10. So that little issue was done. But right away afterward, it says, "Afterward, I came into the house of Shemaiah, the son of Deliah, the son of Mehetabeel, who was shut up. And he said, let us meet together in the house of God within the temple, and let us shut the doors of the temple, for they will come to slay thee. Yea, in the night will they come to slay thee." So here's this attempt again, because they say, "Nehemiah, come on. Let's go over here to the church. It's safe in the church. Let's come over here to my church. We're okay here. We'll take care of you here." And yet it says in verse 11, Nehemiah says, "And I said, should such a man as I flee? And who was there that, being as I am, would go into the temple to save his life? I will not go in. And lo, I perceive that God has not sent him. But he that pronounced this prophecy against me, for Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. Therefore was he hired, that I should be afraid, and do so in sin, and that they might have matter for an evil report, that they might reproach me." So he figured this one out too. There's another attempt to scare Nehemiah and to weaken the people with all these accusations. And Sanballat knew it. Nehemiah knew it. Look at verse, let's see, we got 11, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. "My God, think thou upon Tobiah and Sanballat's prayer." Now think about Tobiah and Sanballat according to those, their works. And look at this little bitty plus right here. "And on the prophetess Noadiah." What she have to do with all this? I don't know. There she is. "And the rest of the prophets that would have put me in fear." That's a conspiracy. That is a conspiracy that tried to compromise. They mocked. They challenged them. They doubted them. Nehemiah saw through every one of those things. Look at verse 15. "So the wall was finished in the 25th day of the month Elul, in 50 and 2 days." That's a lot of action in 50 days, isn't it? From Sanballat and Tobiah. That's only a month and a half to almost 2 months. It was all for us. "And it came to pass that when all our enemies heard thereof," heard what? That it was done. They're finished. "And all the heathen that were about us saw these things," saw what? It was done. You got your job done. You made the change. The church is still there. The church is preaching. It's saying it. The pastor's still showing this thing. The website says what it says. And there's been, it's still going. And it's still going. And it's still going. "Then somebody will see it. They were much cast down in their own eyes." Now, do we feel bad about that? I mean, they're bummed. Huh. "I've been trying to get you back. I've been trying to trip you up. I've been trying to get you not to change. I've been trying to mock you, trying to laugh. I've even told things around town that aren't true. I've even tried to do that. I've tried to hurt you. I've tried to sneak somebody in and get you to their church and all this kind of stuff. And a traitor. And I tried everything. And you made it through. Oh. And there's no reason for us to go, oh, I'm sorry." No, they're supposed to be that way. They're supposed to be the ones that are ashamed, according to Paul, right? We're not supposed to be the ones ashamed. They're supposed to feel that way. Someday they will. When? When they perceive that this work was wrought of our God. When it isn't just me doing my educational training to make something work. You're not my little band, you know. When somebody makes it or the church is still here when their money's gone, or you make a change and you've lost all your friends. Maybe you've even lost your job over it, and you're still going strong, even though you may not be prosperous. We've got one guy out there. He's in Indiana. He didn't lose his job because of his observations of Paul, but he did lose his job. And he got started with way back in the years we got the music thing going. And he's had a hard time, the hardest time he's ever had. And he said, yet I've never been so peaceful. I've never been so comfortable. I've never been so enjoying what I'm reading in my Bible. He says, you took away my religion. And he says, boy, did it hurt. But he says, he's thrilled. He's thrilled. So somebody's watching them, and they will know that that is a work of God someday. Because if it was up to us, we wouldn't do it. If it was up to me, I wouldn't be here. If it was up to you, I wouldn't be here. And if it was up to you, you wouldn't be here. I think I did that right. You have the Bible. You're here because of the Bible. And you're rightly dividing some stuff, and we're disappointed, we're frustrated because things that are going on. But we know we got a grasp right here. So we know this is a work of God. So these people, they were much cast down in their own eyes. Verse 16. For they perceived that this work was wrought of our God. It wasn't just us escaping. It wasn't just us playing a game. It was real. But this is crazy. But you know, they still don't give up. I mean, the work is finished. They've accepted the fact that it was from God. Look at verse 17. This is something I don't think I talked about this before. I forgot a lot of this stuff, but look at this verse right here. Last three verses. Moreover, in those days the nobles of Judah sent many letters unto Tobiah. And the letters of Tobiah came unto them. What is this? What is this? Six chapters, and they got the job done. They were attacked by compromise attempts and traitors and the whole thing, and it's done. And they realized this was truly of God. That really is the Bible. That really is the King. That really is the Word of God. I can't believe it. You guys, it's really the Word of God. My enemy is a dud. Wow, I can't believe this. Do we have him in the boat? We don't have him in the boat yet. Again, 17. Moreover, in those days, the nobles of Judah sent many letters unto Tobiah, and letters of Tobiah came unto them. That in Greek, the word letters is also called on the phone, emailed, visited at the local coffee shop. 18. For there were many in Judah sworn unto him. Who? Tobiah. Because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Ara, and his son Johan had taken the daughter of Meshulam, the son of Berechiah, which tells me they're all related somewhere in there. Now here we go. Also they reported his good deeds before me and uttered my words to him. Do you see what they're doing? Nehemiah got the job done. The people got the job done. And all during this time, there were people in that little crew that were still part of Tobiah. And even though the job is done, those people are still sticking up for Tobiah. You know, Tobiah is a good man, you know. He's a pillar of the church. He's a good man. And they go and they tell the pastor, or they tell Nehemiah, all the good things Tobiah has done. Excuse me. Do you realize what Tobiah tried to do to you in your life? Do you realize what Tobiah tried to do to this church? Do you realize what Tobiah tried to do to your family? Do you realize what Tobiah is trying to, what he tried to do to this Bible, to this, to truth, to Christianity? Do you know what? And you kind of get me to think that he's still a good man? I can't do that. I'm sorry. So all the guys, the people, that little crew, take what Nehemiah said back to Tobiah. Well, of course they do that. Telephones have two receivers and talkies. And Tobiah sent letters to put me in fear. Tobiah goes back after Nehemiah. Tobiah, drop it. The work's done. The place is strengthened. The gates are up again. The wall is there. We did our job. You know it's of God. And you folks expect me to just take him back just like that? Because of what he's done? He's a good man? I don't think so. And listen, This goes on everywhere. This whole thing about Nehemiah and Sanballat and Tobiah, to me, was just marvelous. Why? It's such a heart. Well, I know that, but it just shows that wherever you're at in your life, you can learn from that. I would tell you to get the notes, mark this Nehemiah thing up, and when you try to do something and try to, listen, find where you're at in Nehemiah chapter 1 through 6. Maybe you're just at the very end and you're ready to get a victory, and you still think, maybe he's not so bad. Oh, Pastor Jubilation over there, he's really not that bad of a guy. I know he said all he says about you. He can tell everybody in the whole world that you're a pervert and all that kind of stuff. But hey, it's okay. He's a good man. Well, that's not the point. No, I'm not going there again. I'm going here. What about you? And Tobiah got strength from the people within Nehemiah's congregation. That's the thing that gets me. And all the churches and things. I have to say, been there, done that, though. That's why I can't be judgmental about it. Been there, done that. I have. And that's really wrong. That's really wrong. But anyway, there's more to the story, but that's the story with Sanballat and Tobiah. It has spectacular application to your family, to you personally. And I know there's some families out there. We've talked, there's a number of families trying to step up to the plate and make some decisions for their daughter in sports and their kids and their families, and it's tough. But boy, you're going to meet Sanballat and Tobiah face to face. And be careful, even when you think it's over, it's not over. Marvelous set of practical Bible applications.